We have interrupted this program to bring you from EA Island in the Pacific an eyewitness account of the landing of the Japanese surrender envoys on their way to meet General MacArthur in Manila. We take you now to EA Island.
On Iwo Jima, this tiny island in the China Sea, a few miles east of Okinawa, is standing by tensely for a great event, the arrival of Japan's peace envoys en route to Manila. The Japanese planes are expected momentarily. With them flies the long-frustrated hope of men for peace. That hope is plain in the beaming faces of GIs on this Iwo Jima airstrip. One end of the strip has been sealed off by barbed wire at three sides to prevent enthusiastic spectators from interfering with the transfer of the envoys from two Japanese planes to American transports which will take them to Manila. This broadcast comes to you from a mobile unit beside the airstrip, about 5 yards from where the transfer is to take place. It's another beautiful day in Iwo Jima. The stream of GIs coming to view the historic scene began more than 6 hours ago. They came however they could, riding everything from jeeps to bulldozers, walking when necessary. Now the crowd has grown to thousands. It's difficult to say how many because the spectators are all behind the barbed wire fence some 200 yards away. They were cleared away from the immediate arrival point a short time ago to make room for the Japanese planes. Up to a few moments ago, there were doubts in some GI minds. Many of these same servicemen, mostly Air Force personnel manning the strips that cover this island, many of them stood in the same spot 2 days ago when the Japanese envoys were first expected. Their vigil of many hours was wasted when the peace emissaries failed to show up. There may be a lingering doubt yet remaining in a few minds. They will be convinced only when the Japanese envoys step off the plane. It means so much to these men who do the war's fighting. It means getting home, the sole exclusive thought in all their minds. The airstrip in front of me here, a new one just finished for B-29 Superforts, is bare except for the American transports from Manila and a few officials and correspondents. But other strips in the area are crowded with other American planes. Banners and fighters decorated with such examples of GI art as skull and cross bombs and unadorned females. Iwo Jima, 7 miles long and 2 miles wide, is flat as a pancake except for the million-dollar mountain, which rises up 600 feet. This mountain derives its name from the fact that invading American forces use that much money in naval and artillery shells to take it from the Japanese next spring. I now turn you over to Howard Pyle.
Thank you very much, Vince. Speaking of that mountain, I understand also that they call it Gus for the want of a more pronounceable name.
From what they tell me here on Iwo Jima,
the name of the mountain is so out of this world from the standpoint of being able to pronounce it that the boys just call it Gus. It is also referred to occasionally as Banzai Ridge, where many hundreds of our boys faced death and in many cases did die in order to wrest it from the Japanese when the Iwo Jima fight was at the height of its glory. We are turning now just enough so that we can look into the immediate west, a flight of four B-25 are escorting the twin-engine transport plane, which is bringing in these Japanese surrender envoys. They are possibly 5 or 6 miles off the end of the strip, out over the North China Sea, which today is a beautiful blue. The sky is as clear as could possibly be. It's a typical tropic day on Iwo Jima. The clouds have that unusual formation, the unusual rolling effect that seems to be characteristic of the cloud formations in this part of the world. The B-25s, one on each side of the two twin-engine transports of the Japanese delegation, are moving in now over the end of the strip at an altitude of perhaps about 2,000 feet. It appears that they will move on up the strip and perhaps go into a friendly leg before coming back into our broadcast area. I'll turn my mic up and let you hear it as they go over. And they pass on down east on the strip. Two B-25s of the same type that General Doolittle used in the Tokyo raid. escorting, one on the right and one on the left, the two white Red Stars or Red Cross Japanese transport planes. And here is a B-17 rescue plane moving in here right behind me
and coming in directly off of my left.
From the southwest is about 16 P-38s. These P-38s are from the 8th Fighter Group. They constituted a trio of escorts in groups. 12 of them, as I understand it, moved into the general Japanese island area and picked up these two transport planes this morning. Midway of the fight between there and Iwashima, another group of 12 joined in the approach to Iwashima. And then just as they came into the Iwashima area off Okinawa, the third group of 12 P-38s moved in to complete the routine group of flyers who are bringing these boys in. We are trying to keep our eyes on these transports. They are now going into the final leg, which means that they are directly north of the strip at this moment. One B-25 is out in front, coming in over the North China Sea, directly north of us, and gradually now bending in towards this end of the strip. The P-38s are circling very gracefully in that cloud-studded sky over our heads at an altitude of perhaps 3,000 or 4,000 feet. Their twin boom turret and the half-pitched fan of their motors is giving a real glamorous touch to this moment in history when we wait very anxiously for that which has been delayed momentarily, but not so long as to cause us utter despair. 45 months it has been since the Pacific War began. It was December 8th out in this part of the world. With us, it was December 7th. But out here, it was December 8th, and almost 45 months have transpired since that day when we were first catapulted into the Pacific conflict that has since become one of the greatest tragedies in the history of the world and subsequently one of the greatest opportunities for America and her allies to produce a tremendous show of cooperation in an international sense. The B-25 is now almost directly off the end of the landing strip, out, well out, and making the final turn into the landing strip, followed at a mile and a half or 2 miles at intervals of that distance by the two all-white Japanese planes that are bringing the envoys into our strip. And trailing way behind the second of these white transports is the B-25, making up the group of four that came in a moment ago and whose motors we allowed you to hear by holding our microphone well into the sky. On the far flank, I see four P-38s moving along, flanking the second of the white transports. The B-25 leading the group has now turned into the approach to the strip. It shouldn't be more than a minute and a half or 2 minutes until that B-25 sets down here on this end, the west end of the strip. Coming in now on the North China Sea, right underneath him are two small boats plowing along there, leaving a very pretty white wake against the blue background of the sea. Everyone is standing around here in the keenest anticipation. I notice that faces register strange emotions. Some have a sort of a blank stare because of the glare here from the coral strip. Others are being made to move about by the MPs because of the nature of the terrain in which we are operating here requires that these ships be allowed to move right in here and taxi up and park. Here comes the B-25. I'm going to turn the mic into the sound area and let you hear it as it comes down. This is the ship of the same type that Doolittle used. The ship has passed from the range of our microphone and is on the ground. Its nose is painted with the shark, the face of the shark, the same thing that the P-40s used under General Chenault in the China Air Force. You will recall very distinctly the amount of glamorous copy that has been written and the many radio programs that have been broadcast and stories told about the marvelous exploits of the Chenault Air Force with those shark-nosed P-40s. The first of the Japanese envoy planes is now approaching the west end of the strip. I'm looking directly at it. The long, easy glide appears to be smooth enough. In a matter of seconds, the ship will set its three wheels down on the landing strip, and the first of the Japanese envoys to come in will have arrived. Here it is. Listen. The ship has passed out of the range of our microphone vision now, and here comes the other one. Apparently, they are going to make another pass at the field and then come back down, bringing that second envoy ship into the strip slightly behind the first one. The second ship is running right over our head now. The red crosses on the tips of the wings, on the side of the fuselage, on the stabilizer of the tail. It's an interesting experience to sit here on this airstrip way out at Iwo Jima, perhaps the farthest of the remote outposts that have been gained by the Allied command, and wait the arrival of these emissaries. As you know, the arrival of these men has been delayed for several days, with the result that we have all been rather excited about the prospect of what the reactions would be and just under what circumstances we would meet them. I can assure you from the developments that I have witnessed here at Iwo Jima and throughout the rest of the Far East Air Forces in preparation for this event, that every general officer involved means business. There will be the usual courtesies for military and civil reasons, but beyond that, you can expect this to be strictly a business procedure without the slightest indication of conviviality beyond the point as being simply courteous. I want to give you just a touch of information about the B-25 group that is responsible for the escort job that has been done, mostly because of the need for radio communications between the incoming flight and the strip here at Iwo Jima. It's the 345th Bombardment Group, and these boys have been in on the Pacific battle from the very first days of the war. Quite unusually, I think, it happens that the commanding officer of the 345th goes by the name of Lieutenant Colonel Doolittle of San Antonio, Texas. Now, it's a strange coincidence that this B-25 commander should have the same name as the General Doolittle who made the first B-25 raid over Japan. They are no relation whatsoever, but it makes a wonderful fit of a play on words, and certainly a similarity that the boys in the 345th must treasure to a certain extent. The planes have moved on completely out of our area. We are still waiting here patiently for them to come back around. Precautionary measures are naturally the things that are keeping the action of the actual landing somewhat delayed. The planes are now coming low enough that we are absolutely certain that in this approach to the strip, they will set down all of them and taxi into the position here that they are to occupy as the transfer is made to the gigantic C-54 transports that are parked here immediately on our right at the end of the strip. Colonel Harney Estes of San Antonio of the 35th Fighter Group is to be the officer escort, along with the officer guard and the interpreter from this particular area, who will make the trip into Manila with the planes that are moving into position now so that they can take off for General MacArthur's headquarters. The pilot of the C-54 transport will be Colonel Earl T. Rick from Hot Springs, Arkansas. He's the deputy commander of the Southwest Pacific Wing of the Air Transport Command. The transport, what we call out here in the Pacific, the plush job. In other words, they have beautifully upholstered seats, a very comfortable style of travel. Looking now directly off to the deep left, it appears that, without question, we are now going to have a completed landing. As I said a moment ago, the repeated tries over the strip are for security reasons and for these flyers who are strange to this strip to discover exactly what they're up against from the standpoint of general terrain and general airflow. Of course, they have to make a trip over the tower for the purpose of getting their landing instructions. Iwo Jima is an island that has been made famous for many reasons. Famous first for the fact that it is one of the Okinawa group, and in the general area where our combat men have put up a supreme effort to wrest the fight from the Japanese in the Pacific, specifically, individually, Iwo Jima has become famous as the place where Ernie Pyle lost his life in association with the doughboys he loved so well.